Straight from South Africa.
This is the strange and mysterious world with your hosts, Lee Straighten and William Pollinson.
Welcome to Strange and Mysterious World. This is season one, episode 21. Tonight's discussion, we're going to be chatting a little bit about the occult and Nazism. William, what have you got on your side, bud, for this, for tonight?
Well, firstly, I've started a five-day fast. So yeah. On the second day, end of the second day, I've been, let me check on this app here. I've got this really cool app. It's called Life.
Was like a wet fast or dry fast? Do you drink during the day or?
Well, yeah, I only drink water. That's all drink.
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard guys going on dry fast for even like 30 days.
Really? I did it for 3 days once, but I cucked myself, dude.
Seriously, so you didn't drink any water or food?
No water, no food, nothing for 3 full days. It was 72 hours. Okay, so I was trying to get ready for something called the Hunblecher, which is the vision quest. I was supposed to go through to America and do a vision quest with one of the American Indian shamans that I'd been in touch with.
Okay, can you explain to the audience what a vision quest is first? Because I've only recently heard about a vision quest.
Okay. Well, basically it is, so if you go look a little bit on the American Indian law and the spiritual side of it, the American Indians generally do something called a vision quest, which basically means that you are put up on a sacred mountain for 4 days and four nights, no food, no water. You are put into a sacred circle. The circle is enough for you to kind of walk around it and to sleep in. And to do whatever business, but you're not allowed to leave the circle. So if you're cucking and whatever you need to do, it's in the circle, dude. So you're not allowed to leave that circle because it gets blessed and everything by the shamans before they leave. And then they leave you there for 4 days and four nights.
Oh,
and then obviously there it's
meditation time.
Yeah, proper meditation. But there you've got to try and commune with the great spirit. And I can probably guess that after 4 days of no food and no water, you're going to be hallucinating quite a bit. So.
Yeah,
so maybe that's where the visions come, but yeah, that's kind of what a vision quest is. But to prepare for that is a huge task. So what I used to do was I used to fast for a day a week, one full day, start in the morning, don't eat anything, don't drink anything until the following morning, and then I do again, and then I'd venture to build up to 2 days, and then that was 2 days. I wasn't doing that every week. I started doing that once a month, 2 days. And then eventually built up to 3 days. So 72 hours, no food, no water, nothing. Dude, I promise you, 3 days was one of the most difficult things that I've had to do. But also remember for me as well, as I'm still at work, I'm still doing what I need to do. So my mind is off of the food and off of the water. So you don't concentrate on it. Now, can you imagine you in this circle that's probably 20 meters by 20 meters for 4 days? You kind of don't move out of there. Can you imagine what the mental preparation you have to do that? So,
that really goes psycho, because that's what's happening to me now. Like I'm at the end of my second day.
Yeah.
And it's like, all I'm doing is thinking about food. So then I have to go and I got to go do something to like take my mind off the food. So I can imagine in a circle, you're going mad.
Yeah. Cause but, nothing to do. You know what I mean? You've got zero squat to do. And if it rains, you are able to drink the rainwater so you can hold your hands up and drink because that's the great spirit giving you nourishment. But you're not allowed to take food in with you. You're not allowed to, you know, the shaman is not allowed to bring you food, nothing. You, whatever the great spirit gives you is what you're able to.
So like if a cockroach run past and you.
Yeah, child of cockroach. Remember, catch
it. Or a cricket or something. Then it's the great spirit just giving you
some
food.
Giving you something, some nourishment, yeah.
But or a lizard or something.
Yeah.
Okay, so then what happened with the fast, like, and then did you get to the vision quest?
No, I didn't end up going to go from South Africa through to America is way too expensive. Then to still spend, because before you go up to the vision quest, you got to prepare yourself as well. There's a whole ceremony that's got to get done before it, which costs money. So eventually I worked it out and I couldn't afford it. So I kind of gave up on the idea. But I can understand from the fasting side of things, it gets very difficult there. It can get very difficult.
So, So did you have any like experiences? What did you feel, or did you have any like
no experiences? Absolute hunger, dude. Your mind is just on food. It's just wants food.
I've done a 7 day. I did a 3 day once, which was just with water. Then I did a 7 day one, but that was with fruit juice, like squeezed fruit juice.
Yeah.
Then I did a 7 day one of just water, 7 days. And that one, and it was funny, I'll tell you, the reason why I did it was because there's this Christian friend of mine, like I do a lot of shoots with her because the NGO, she's got an NGO and she needs little videos now and then. And we've been working on it, like two documentaries together.
Mm.
And she's like heavy Christian. I mean, she comes to my house and she sees all of the weird stuff that I'm doing. And she's just like, oh, snake oil, load of shit, bullshit. I'm trying to act.
Cannabis oil, snake oil.
yeah. So she sees my Kundalini books and she's like, oh, you trying to, and like, yeah, I'm trying to activate my Kundalini. And she's like, ah, oh, that's Satan. That's with the snake. It's Satan. It's, she's always like typical Christian, just being so judgmental. And then she told me, she's like, because she fasts now and then. And obviously I know in like all the spiritual literature, there's always like, fasting is like a big thing. I mean, Ramadan with the Muslims and in Judaism and Christianity, they're also like, I mean, in the first page of Matthew, they talk about like how to fast and stuff. And so like I always knew it was a spiritual thing. And she said that she did like a 7 day fast and God spoke to her. So I was like, fuck this. I want God speaking. I mean, if it's really God or if it's a hallucination, that sounds wild. I want to try this out and see what happens.
Mm.
So I fasted for 7 days. Like I didn't eat a thing. And yeah, no one spoke to me. No, I didn't have any, God didn't speak to me. I didn't have any hallucinations. Nothing happened. I was just grumpy, miserable. And like my emotions, like on day five, like my emotions were so wild. Like little things that would normally just not affect me, I would just get so irritated. And also like things with my daughter, which I'd usually be like so easy, water off a duck's back, or my ex, her mother, like things would just get more irritated than normal. And then eventually I went for a walk in a forest, and then I was like in the forest and I was so emotional. Like I sat there, I mean, like just so many emotions. Like that's why I think it's probably with a spiritual thing. I think it also like does like an emotional cleanse on you or something, but anyway, the reason why I'm doing it now is that I told my brother-in-law
mm-hmm.
about the fasting or whatever, but I didn't tell him about like me trying to see if God spoke to me or whatever. I just told him about it. And he was like, so then he got really involved in it and he started researching and he started seeing all these health benefits.
Yeah.
And then he started fasting. So now like he's like fasting before. So he just fasts like all the time. And then we got this app called Life.
Okay.
You see, like, it tracks your...
Yeah.
I mean, if people don't see this on YouTube or whatever, but, I mean, the people that do see this on YouTube, they can see it. It's, I mean, fasting for 46 hours, and then you can... it gives you, like, these little badges, and then you click on the badges, and it tells you, like, the stages. Like, it says, the first stage, your body is starting to break down and burn fat, and then the next stage is, like, you switched off fat-burning mode, you are generating significant ketone source. And then this the third one, where cells are recycling old components and breaking down misfolded proteins linked to Alzheimer's and other diseases. And then it always gives you a source where they've done the study. And then you can go look at the source of the study, which is really interesting. And then now this is where I've just got to now at 46 hours in.
Yeah.
I've got to this badge. It says your growth hormone is now 5 times what it was when you started your fast. And then it gives you the source where you can go and read where the study took place or that. So yeah, so it's got an amazing health benefits. And on this app, like you would go in and you can actually just read all the research. And it's just, it sounds like a life cure for everything. So.
Yeah, look, I get major headaches. So I do intermittent fasting. I do that every day. So generally I will eat between 4 and 8, and then for 4 in the afternoon and 8 in the evening, and thereafter I don't eat again until the following day 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh,
so I do that every day. Found that I got massive headaches in the beginning. It's bad, the headaches, but that eventually kind of subsided. But I find it's actually quite easy to do that, the intermittent fasting.
But apparently, yeah, that's an amazing health benefit. I mean, like there's reading about the health benefits. And you're a vegan as well, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that new documentary series that came on Netflix, it's The Twin Experiment. What is it called? You Are What You Eat, The Twin Experiment. Have you seen that?
I haven't.
When they get twins, they got 21 twins, but in the documentary, they only follow four with the cameras, but there's 21 in the whole experiment. And they give the one a carnivore diet and the other one, well, not a carnivore diet, like a, not just purely meat, just a balanced diet like a normal, with meat.
And yeah, them. Yeah.
And then the other twin, because it's great, because they both got exactly the same DNA genetics, you know what I mean? So it's got the same metabolism, same blood type, same, everything's the same. So okay. That's the best way to do the experiment because it's amazing because then you're going to get the proper results instead of just doing it with 1,000 people that are all different. And then you don't, you know, it's very hard to tell because, so the one twin gets the meat diet and the other one gets the vegan diet. And then at the end, they show the result. And then obviously there's a whole lot of food propaganda that goes in there. Well, I mean, like, obviously it's not, when I say propaganda, it's like, I don't believe any documentaries because like I make documentaries and I know how people can just, they can push their agenda. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and then it goes into like, you know, because I thought when I started watching the documentary series, this is like four episodes, I was like, oh my gosh, now I'm going to watch these four, these twins like complain about the one's going to be like, oh, the meat, the vegan diet, like, oh, I'm so hungry. And I thought it was just like four episodes of these people just complaining about their diet, you know, like just some kind of like Big Brother bullshit, like kind of following these guys around with their diet.
Yeah.
But then it goes into like three of the episodes, the last episode only comes out with the results, but the three episodes of just like how meat is destroying your health and the world and all of this stuff, which, you know, I get and whatever, but sometimes when they come up with the stats and stuff, I'm just like, I don't know. I think you've manipulated that. Like, so seriously, like 1/4 pounder take 1,000 liters to make 1,000 liters of water to make 1/4 pounder. I mean, like how many 1/4 pounders are sold every second around the world? I mean, it's sometimes it's ridiculous. I'm just like, no, that's just propaganda. But anyway, yes, it does. You know, I get it. It's there's so many arguments. So who knows what is real? But anyway, at the end of the day, when the results came back, there wasn't like the weight loss wasn't such a thing. It was so insignificant. It wasn't even. But the only things that really came back was that I thought was quite interesting. It was the meat, the vegan diet, the people's telomeres on their chromosomes, they grew longer than the other twin that was eating the meat diet. So like, you know, with your telomeres, if they're longer, you're going to live longer because it's like your health, it's like your biological clock. So even if you're 40, if your telomeres are short, you might be aging, you might be 60 in your age, even though you're 40, but like, if you've got longer telomeres, you could be 40, but your age, actually your cellular level age is actually like 30 because you're more healthy or whatever. So the twins that were on the vegan diet, their telomeres grew longer.
Yeah.
So that was very interesting. Then the brain function thing, there was no significance whatsoever, but they just say it was only an 8-week trial. If they did it for longer, sorry, this is a spoiler alert for everyone out there that wants to watch this docu series, they said it was only over 8 weeks, so maybe they did longer. And they were, and the people were like, you know, in their 40s, and so they didn't really have much mental. I mean, they said if they did it over longer with people that were older, that they would see a bit of a difference in the mental state. The thing was also with the health, because there was all of that, you know, there's all that stuff about the vegan diet. People are stronger, and like the gladiators used to have a vegan diet, and that's why they were so strong. And like people, then you know, the guy that is the strongest in the world, the guy that lifts the most weight, he's a vegan. And there's all of that stuff about being a vegan that actually makes you stronger. But the health thing didn't really, the people that are the vegan, because they also had the guy doing exercise with them all the time, and they had an exercise program. They didn't show any difference to the fitness or anything. So that was a bit like upsetting, because I really, that's why I went vegan for 6 months. I thought, fuck, I'm going to be like a machine. And I didn't feel anything either.
No, but you know, the problem is you stopped at 6 months. You should have carried on. The first six months, I struggled for the meat and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, but thereafter, it was actually that it changed.
Okay, but I mean, geez, I travel a lot. I can't even. You get stopped at a garage to get fuel, and you go to the shop. You can't even. There's nothing to eat there. There's nothing to eat for the vegans.
You can have a packet of chips or French fries for those overseas.
So anyway, how did we get onto veganism now? Where were we?
You were chatting about fasting. intermittent fasting.
My brain, all the traces of my brain's gone already. I can't even remember what I was talking about. So the fasting.
Yeah. So you say, what's the reason you were doing it? So why did you?
Oh, so anyways, I'm now doing it for the health thing.
Okay.
And just see. I think it's going to be healthy.
Okay. Yeah. My wife, she fasts quite often. She does like a 2 or 3 day, like what you're doing now, but she does it like for 3 days and then carries on, tries to go the healthy route. But I think it's cool, actually, man. Pretty good. I mean, like you said, in most religious sects, they say fasting is pretty beneficial.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like my mind, I mean, like I feel like a little bit high now, and like I was feeling like very alert and very like conscious earlier. And like kind of floating, and I could see, like, obviously when you get to probably those like delirium kind of states, it can be quite a spiritual thing or whatever. But I mean, also in spirituality, you got to cleanse your body to, you know, like in all of yoga, that's how you know, if you're going to be doing Kundalini or whatever, trying to do it, you have to purify your body as much as possible so that the Kundalini energy doesn't go into the wrong nadis and, you know, like make you psychotic. But or damage your nervous system. But so anyway, talking about Kundalini, look at this. I'm reading this book now. I got this book. It's called Kundalini Vaidya.
Yeah, okay.
And this is supposed to be like a really good Kundalini book. Like, I mean, one of the top ones that are out there of information of how to raise your Kundalini. But I mean, I just read this first page, the author's note, and I wanted to vomit. Because this is what she says. I call the divine within by the name Kundalini Shakti and used feminine gender pronouns to revert to this sacred inner peace. Then she writes here, if the reader is not comfortable with the usage, they may mentally substitute a pronoun, he or it, that feels more familiar and may likewise substitute the name of the divine for the one.
Okay, so that's basically a woke book.
Yeah, so then she goes, I'm like, yeah, look at this. She goes, I've chosen not to capitalize the pronouns she or her when referring to Kundalini Shakti. However, instead of now the archaic and gender-based pronoun he, yeah, I have chosen to utilize the gender-neutral plural pronoun they or their to avoid the correct but unwielding singular he or she. So it's like, and it goes on like this about, I mean, look, I used to.
How many pages is in that book? That looks like a thick ass book, that.
And I think this is close to the camera. And then it says, I use the plural personal pronoun we or our to indicate that I'm representing my lineage. Anyway, so she goes on about all these fucking pronouns and bullshit. Like, it's so frustrating. Well, let me just tell you how many pages this is. I think like 270.
Okay, it's probably big print. And then when was it printed? What year? Must have been recent. I'm reckoning probably the last 3 years.
Well, it says here 2005. But anyway, it's like, I mean, if anybody that has a spiritual bone in their body know that there's the divine masculine and the divine feminine. I mean, that's how the whole of nature, the whole world, that's how it all interacts with each other. And that's how it actually sustains. And that's why we're living, because everything has a feminine or male aspect. And that's how everything is, like, procreation or anything in nature actually exists, because of the divine and masculine and feminine, and they're just as important as each other. There's no like one's better than the other. They're both exactly like equal, and there's a balance, like the yin and the yang. And like, I mean, like males are supposed to be 70% male, 30% female, and females 70% female, 30% female. So there's a balance with it all. And look, without the divine masculine and feminine, everything would just fall apart and just be, but then we've just completely perverted it and made it so fucking insane that now we've got yoga book, like how to raise your Kundalini, talking about pronouns, which I want to throw this book away now, even though it's supposed to be one of the best Kundalini books on them, like out there.
Good start. all right. I went in a path this last week. You know, we had a chat just before we were going to do the show. And I said to you, hey, I'm so keen to do, you know, Hitler's Nazism and the occult, because, you know, we'd heard so much, there's so much videos and movies and YouTube about the massive occult stuff in the Third Reich. But I was so disappointed, dude, because there's actually not much.
Is it?
Yeah, there's not much at all.
Because I knew that there was the bell that they were developing for like.
Yeah, but remember, that's not a Coulter. That's technological advancements, which they had. I mean, those guys were sharp with their technology, dude.
But I'm sure there was some cult stuff to look. But anyway, and then I knew that they went to Tibet to go look, to get those esoteric documents of, and then they also were looking for the what is this thing? The
Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail and the Ark.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that's also why Indiana Jones has Nazis in it. That's
100%.
So cool. The swastika is actually like from the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And it's, yes. And it's also in Hinduism and everything. And apparently it's like, it's actually the cross of Jesus. If you spin it, it makes a swastika if you look down at it and it's spinning.
Okay. So, now then I haven't tried that. But yes, you're correct. 100% correct. The swastika was actually a Buddhism used in Hinduism and Jainism. It's a symbol of good fortune, fertility, and health. But I think when Hitler took it over, that wasn't his plan. That his plan was they used it as an Aryan symbol, a symbol for Aryan superiority. I don't know if you remember, we actually had, yeah, in South Africa, we had a group that used something very similar, which was the RBB. They used to use the three-legged star. Do you remember that?
Jeez, no, I was thinking of too young.
Yeah, and they also had it on a red background, the RBB.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so yeah,
that's the Nazis of South Africa. For
yeah, they got the ideology, I think, something very similar. But you must remember now as well, back when Hitler was in charge, occultism, the occult practices were seen as a threat to his party. He was not keen to have people practicing the cult. So he would shut your shops down or arrest you, depending on
that. Maybe because he knew so much about the cult, and that's probably how he got into such power because of his supernatural, like occult, whatever he was doing. I mean, how powerful it was. And he shut down everybody else so they couldn't.
So let me tell you the story. So it wasn't actually him. He thought the occultism was a load of BS. He used it as propaganda, though, but he was not a fan of occultism. The guy that was actually involved there was Heinrich Himmler. He was the second in charge. He was just under Hitler. He was heavily involved in their cult. Heavily involved.
Okay.
And he, when he was born, it was in 1900 in Munich. And him and, funny enough, Hitler were raised Catholic, but like heavy, strict Catholics.
Oh, wow.
And when he was at school, because he was also in a rural area, this is Himmler now. He was born in a rural area, so farming. Oh. He studied to become a farmer.
Oh, wow.
And they were doing, so they used to work a lot with cattle. And you know how you do the artificial insemination where you choose the best bulls?
Well, it's kind of the same thing. You're kind of the same thing, like cattle or humans. You know, we're all just a bunch of sheep. We're just all in a herd. Just, you know, so, you know, coming from a farming background, you just got to manage the herd.
Yeah, but talk about that now. So the whole eugenics thing actually derived from him working in the farm.
Okay, because I thought that was Hitler's cousin or...
No. So this is how it went. He was working on the farms. He was working with the cows and bulls. They did the artificial insemination, so where they would actually choose the best semen from the best bulls, choose the best cows, mix them and get like your best breeds of bulls and cows. That actually eventually led on to eugenics in the German... When he became powerful, he brought that same theories that he had when he was learning as a farmer into the human things.
Oh, wow.
So what actually happened was, as a farmer, as a rural community, they actually disliked the cities hugely, okay, because the cities were encroaching on the farmlands, which they despised.
Okay.
And the people that were living in the cities were mostly Jewish people. They were not allowed to own lands. Okay, so they were living in the
cities.
So wait
a second. So the whole Nazi movement was started by an angry farmer and an angry artist.
Yes.
So Hitler was pissed off about his art and the Jews didn't want to buy it. And he was pissed off. His wingman was pissed off with his farming business and the Jews.
So now you must remember in those days, like I said, the Jewish people were not allowed to own land, so they were living in the cities. And 80% of the businesses in Germany were owned by Jewish people. Mm-hmm. So now, coming from this rural side, these guys, at the start, not hugely anti-Semitic, but they were anti-Semitic. Okay, not massively, because they would still tolerate, but they
typical people in rural areas. It's always the rural areas that are like the rednecks and the... and the racists.
Yeah, there's something called blood and soil, which was an ideology that the Nazi party had, which was this whole thing about the farming communities and everything needs to get back to rural and get away from cities.
Okay.
And that's also the reason why he invaded Poland, why Himmler actually started invading Poland. Okay, but prior to all of that, there was a guy by the name of Otto Rahn. He landed up going to the SS, but he was in the Pyrenees area of France. And he was searching, I don't know if you've ever heard of a group called the Cathars.
No.
Okay. The Cathars were like the Knights Templar, but they were called the Cathar Knights.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And apparently these guys were the keepers of the Holy Grail.
Okay.
And he was in search of the Holy Grail back in the 1930s. So this is before he joined Hitler. So he was searching and he spent a lot of money trying to find the Holy Grail. And as you mentioned earlier, he is actually the inspiration for the German officer, you know, the main German officer in the Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then the Raiders of the Lost Ark, the Last Crusade or the Search for the Holy Grail. He was the inspiration for that.
Oh, wow.
This Otto Rahn. Obviously, with Steven Spielberg, he had done a bit of research into this, and this is where the idea came from. Now, this dude, Otto Rahn, and Cathar Knights, Heinrich Himmler loved this idea of the Knights, and he actually started forming a knighthood in Germany. So this is before the whole war started. He formed a knighthood, and they took over a castle. I think it was called Wewelsburg Castle. He eventually took over that, and that became like the Knights hub. And the SS were his army. But in the SS, I think he had 13 or 14 like superiors that he had as his knights, and he actually knighted them. Wow. There was another dude called Karl Maria Willigut. I don't know how you get Maria as a second name as a guy.
I was identified as a
as a he, maybe she, I don't know, but how you have a second name is that, I don't know, but he actually was the most instrumental guy in the whole occultism thing in this Heinrich Himmler's SS. He was born in Austria. He became a colonel in the army, and he spent 40 years in the military, this dude Maria, and he was actually a decorated officer. He was decorated. I mean, he had won, I think it was a Medal of Valor in one of the wars. I can't remember if it was World War One. But he was highly decorated. Also Catholic. He got involved with the Masonic Lodge in 1889. And he studied ancient German ruins and the occult. He eventually became a colonel. And I think in 1919, he resigned his office. And then he started studying the occult. He put more time in the occult. He eventually formed this idea that he thought that he was a clairvoyant and that he was a descendant of the line of God kings dating back to 228,000 BC, which is back to the time of Atlantis, apparently. So he was apparently some lineage to this. But now his wife thought this is a whole lot of bullshit and got him.
The psychiatric treatment.
Got him, yeah. They put him in an asylum for 3 years.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because of his beliefs and you know, that kind of stuff. And now, obviously, he came out in, I think it was in 1927. And then it was in 1933, I think he met Heinrich Himmler with all these ideas. And Himmler loved that. He loved this idea that there was this guy that thought he was some descendant and he was trying to push the whole Aryan philosophy, which was his ideas as well. Also was against Jewish people.
But in, like Rudolf Steiner in his book, The Lemurians and
Atlantis and Lemuria. Yeah.
There was one of the root races was the Aryans. They were descendant of the Atlanteans.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So I think he was obviously he was reading a lot of different people and making up his, or maybe he was psychotic, because apparently when he went to the asylum, it was for schizophrenia and megalomania. But I think that was just his wife thinking that all his beliefs were a lot of bollocks. But anyway, so he met Heinrich Himmler in 1933, and then he was brought into the SS, the Schutzstaffel. And him and Himmler developed this whole knights with the Wewelsburg Castle. They developed all the knight things. And he was the one that actually designed the ring. You know, that's called the honor ring or the death's head ring. The one that's got the skull and the crossbones. And then if you've seen it, it's got all those little designs around it, all these like sort of ruins that he
in the Nazi party.
Yeah. So specific guys were given these rings and your knights. If the knights died, so you weren't allowed to own the ring. The ring belonged to Himmler, but it was bestowed upon you. And if you died and somebody was nearby, they would take that ring and give it back to Himmler. And then he would put it in a hall called Valhalla, in their hall of the dead. He was heavily influenced by Arthur and the Round Table because he had his own Round Table. And this was all before the war. So this had already been developed. So by the time the war had started, we already had the knights running around and all sorts of stuff going on. So when they invaded Poland, it was the idea that they wanted to get land for the Germans. So they basically killed hundreds of thousands of Polish people. And it wasn't only Jewish people, because you know anybody that was against Hitler, he would put in there. So whether you were Czechoslovakian, you were killed. Whether you were against his party, you could have been German and you were against his party, you were killed. It doesn't matter. All the gypsies and that were put into the concentration camps as well. So it was quite a major thing. And then when Himmler actually went in and invaded Poland, they took over the land, the farmlands, and then they brought the Germans across too for this whole blood and soil idea to get these rural communities going. And then they wanted more and more and more land. I was actually quite astounded, by, you know, these guys' beliefs and how people actually bought into it. And then obviously Hitler, not believing in this stuff, but allowed for the propaganda to carry on. Even though he didn't believe in this stuff, he allowed for the propaganda because he understood propaganda. He understood, you know, what people were, and people were believing in this stuff, but one way.
Oh, well, I mean, if a YouTube video can make you believe the earth's flat, I mean, you could make anybody believe anything with just a shitty video.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, and it was actually Himmler that actually came up with the concentration camps and the gassing chambers and that kind of stuff. It was actually Himmler, it wasn't Hitler. It was all Himmler's ideas. Himmler and this Wolligut, because they wanted to get rid of the Jewish people, the Jewish nation. So it was them. Hitler approved it, but it wasn't his idea at all. Sure, Himmler actually eventually towards the end of the war, Himmler towards the end of the war thought he could take over from Hitler because he knew when they were losing, he thought Hitler was going to kill himself soon, which he did. And then he was going to take over and he was going to be the next guy in charge. He eventually died, but yeah, he apparently took some poison tablets and he died. But there's theories to say that it's impossible for him to have taken that because he was body checked like three times with nothing. And they reckon he was probably beaten to death and poisoned. So yeah. Either way, whatever. But it was a bit disappointing because there was nothing really occultish besides the SS ruins, the two ruins that they used, they're called Sieg ruins, ruins of victory. There's the two, you know, like the music band Kiss, they've got those two ruins, they're lightning bolts.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was developed by some other dude. He was a graphic designer and he was paid $1. For that design, but those were apparently victory ruins. But also, if you go back to an older runic symbology, it's actually a worship of the sun. Sun worship.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so most of the stuff was just runic and symbology. And I know they had a lot of rituals, but some symbolism, that kind of stuff, it was never much. Besides what you've mentioned already about the swastika, which we've already spoken about, there was nothing really.
So really none of this stuff about him using like a lot of clairvoyance and...
He hated that stuff, dude. Hitler never used that stuff.
And then also, I also heard that when they were looking for
The Holy Grail,
and there was something else they were looking for. And then when they went to Tibet, like actually BMW even funded them. Like they got all these corporate companies
Well, Hugo Boss designed those black outfits.
What for?
Yeah, those black outfits that the SS used to wear? The black and red,
what? What? Yeah?
Hugo Boss designed those.
No, get out of here. That's insane.
But he went to Tibet actually to, it wasn't for any mystical stuff. It was actually to go and find the origins of the Aryan race. They went to Tibet for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jeez, and then he found a whole lot of brown head, brown skin, brown eyed monks.
Yeah. But I don't know. It was such a weird thing, and then it kind of took me down a path. And I'm reading this stuff, and I just thought, geez, how did people actually fall for all of that? A, and B, what kind of maniacs are people to enforce the things that he did? And the the eugenics thing I wanted to talk about. So, what would happen now is, as an SS soldier, you were now part of the Aryan race, but you had to prove your Aryan heritage, eh? So you couldn't just get into the SS. You had to prove your heritage back to 1717. You had to date it back to then to prove that you were Aryan. And they would only allow the Aryan soldiers, the men, to marry Aryan women. But they would check the woman to make sure that she could bear children, to make sure that she was good looking, because they just wanted the best looking race and, you know, best genetics. If you had any deformity, so if you were alcoholic, you were out. If you had some sort of deformity, you were out. So what if, and going back to the cows and the bulls, to find the best genetics. If you had any sort of disease, if you had a hereditary diabetes, you were out. If you had whatever they could find, you were out, and you probably landed up in the concentration camps. So they put that there, they enforced that in their own people. Jeez. And do you remember? So they were looking to try and create the super soldier. And this is the idea where the Marvel Captain America came from.
Are you serious? Wow.
Yeah. The super soldier idea. That's actually the German. So you remember they were fighting up against Hydra in the Marvel comics, or in the Marvel movies as well. Hydra was the German side of the Captain America. So the Americans were fighting against Hydra. Hydra is the German side. So again, it's also coming from that idea.
All roads lead back to Hitler.
Well, let's say Himmler, because it seems like Himmler, he was steering most of the stuff.
I just want to check this thing because I also read something.
Which thing?
About eugenics.
Yeah.
Where one of the ideas came from.
Now, eugenics dates back long time, dude. It didn't come from Himmler. The idea they brought on from the kettle there, but that idea about eugenics is quite old.
It was a cousin of Charles Darwin. That's right. Says he explained the idea of eugenics was largely developed and popularized in the late 1800s by Sir Francis Galien, a cousin of Charles Darwin. I remember reading that about like Charles Darwin's cousin. He was like kind of autistic and he was obsessed with numbers and like also making like a, yeah, I can't remember what it was, but I remember it was stemmed from Charles. That's interesting. Charles Darwin creationism.
Yeah, but I think most of Charles Darwin's ideas about the human evolution has already been proven to be bollocks.
Yeah, I mean, like there's a huge gap, like even in the fossil records of like where it actually like how people, it's basically just the theory that everybody like, it's like the most plausible theory.
So but yet the problem is the most scientists still follow that theory, but yet it's proven to be a lot of bullshit.
Yeah. Well, there's like a lot of gaps in it and it's not really physically absolutely proven to 100%. It's just that
it's not even, like not, even a, not even like 50%. It's just the theory.
Yeah, just a theory. And it's like, so everyone just latches onto that and
yeah. But anyway, yeah, so that was my research into the Third Reich and the occultism. So it wasn't really overdramatic. I really thought I was going to find some heavy stuff, you know, like their seance meetings and, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Although saying that. Okay, I'm talking about Hitler now, but he didn't get involved in that stuff. But Himmler and them in the castle, they were communing with the spirits of the apparent gods, the old Germanic gods in the castle, you know, as a knights. But it wasn't, it was just like the 14 of them plus him. You know what I mean? His knights, his main knights. And
I reckon that's where he would ask questions like, okay, where should we attack? And I reckon he got a lot of information from the dark side there to influence Hitler. was reading this book, The Foundations of Freemasonry Series, Rosicrucianism and Masonry Origins by Manly Paul Hell. Yeah, just...
The Freemason things, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Freemason order is supposed to have come from Egypt.
Yeah, well, it all kind of all dates back to the Egypt. I mean, even like Moses, I mean, he took all of his knowledge from the mystery schools of Egypt and take it and adapted it for Israel. And I mean, it all came out of that, like the Freemasons. Basically, he says that the Freemasons there's a fraternity within a fraternity. So there's like the Freemasons, like, I mean, I can go just join the Freemasons here in Cape Town. But the thing is that that's just like a front where they have like, you know, it's a lovely message. It's very ethical. And they like trying to bring like wisdom and knowledge and
help the poor and all that kind of stuff.
And it's a good message. And it's a feel good, lovely thing. And it's a fraternity for, you know, guys that, you know, that can get together and share their beliefs in like how to save the world or whatever. But then there's a fraternity within that fraternity, which actually got the secret of like occult knowledge and everything. And he says that it stems from like three other mystical traditions. The one is it comes from the Dionysiac artificers, which actually came from the Roman Collegia. And then the last one that he says it stemmed from was the Arabian Rosicrucianisms, which actually the Rosicrucianisms like was formed from the Knights Templar and the Sufism, which is, you know, is Muslim mysticism.
Wait, doesn't a Rosicrucian mean a Red Cross?
Yeah, so it's a Red Cross, but it comes from that. He's gone into that quite more in detail, which I can't actually remember all of that. But basically, that also all came from Egypt.
Okay.
So that and those three formed the Masonaries. But the Masonry, which was interesting because the Masons, because he says it was actually people. It was a workman's guild.
Yes, in Egypt.
Of medieval Europe, actually.
Oh, really?
A workman's called of medieval Europe that made the cathedrals and certain stuff. And basically all of it is actually steeped heavily in pagan, from the pagan mysteries. And he was saying interesting things that when they were building those temples back in the day, they didn't actually use like tools like these, you know, archaic tools that we all think, you know, they've got a chisel and a fucking hammer carrying logs, things, heavy things on logs and stuff. They used like sound and different like things that we wouldn't even know about to like build these temples, and it's all been lost to antiquity.
So the Freemasons then, if I get it right, the Masons, the stonemasons that were building the Egyptian temples and the Egyptian, I wouldn't say pyramids, let's say Egyptian temples, and then they obviously carried on through the thousands of years, and they were the ones that built all.
Yes, exactly. Because
he also said through Europe and stuff. Okay.
Because he also said that they were also involved in building King Solomon's temple.
Yeah.
And so that's where it all comes through. But he says that it's because the thing is also I think because he's researching it from the outside. You know what I mean? Because like, I think once you get initiated into any of these like deep levels of a mystery school or a secret society, then you can't actually give the truth out to anybody. You know what I mean? You can't like frustrating. So if you want to write a book about it, you've got to come from outside and do the research from the outside and try and find all the information. And he says it's quite impossible to actually find all the information, like of what the symbols mean and all of this. And
so where did he get his information from then? So if the guys in the higher ups are not allowed to talk about it, how did he
He talks about certain like books that he and certain manifestos and things that have come out of the Rosicrucian orders and certain authors that he's got his information about. But he says it actually runs dry and like he can't actually find most of the information. And I'm just thinking, obviously, unless you've been initiated into it, you'd probably know more. But he also seems to think that it's like the stuff that's in the symbols and the symbolic meaning within the symbols and all of their like rituals and stuff like that has also been kind of lost. But who knows? Because he wasn't who knows if he was even initiated in or not.
Sorry, well, what's that book called?
It's a quick read. It's called Foundations of Freemasonry Series. There's probably just one in a few. This is Rosicrucians and Masonic Origins by Manly P. Hall. Yes, and also what the other thing was, obviously with the Inquisition, the Rosicrucianism and all of the other societies had to obviously go underground. So yeah. it wasn't really like, oh, this is like a secret society. It was also because they were fearing for their lives. So they had to go underground and become secret because they would have been killed by the Inquisition.
Yeah.
So he also discusses a bit of that, which is quite interesting. Yeah, I highly recommend it to anybody. It'll only take you about an hour to read. It's a short book.
Yeah.
So I was desperately trying to finish it because I also didn't have anything because I had my Kundalini book made me want to vomit on it.
Your woke Kundalini book.
So then I tried something else, but then we were coming on and I only got halfway through it.
So I know that the Knights Templar are involved with the Freemasons as well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He said the Knights Templar actually was part of the Rosicrucianism. That's where it stemmed from. And then the Rosicrucians were part is one of the three main, mystery traditions that actually formed the Masons, yeah. Freemasons.
Right.
Which also is quite interesting because there's so much stuff about how Masons are the devil and they're satanic. I mean, obviously everything that people don't understand and they fear they're going to call it that. But and all of the buildings in America were built by the Masons, the important ones, and there's all of this, and all the churches were built by the Masons, and that's why a lot of them don't actually have crosses on them, because the Masons were not about God and Jesus, and they were actually satanic. And I know there's a lot of that going around, but it's just an organization or whatever that stems from mysticism, really. Schools.
Many years ago, maybe about 10, 11, 12 years ago, I looked at joining Freemasons here in Durban. My wife was, no ways, man. But I think her dad was actually involved with Freemasonry. But I had a look online, and there's a few things that you've actually got to, when you want to become a Freemason, there's a few things you've got to believe in. One of them is you've got to believe in God.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether you're a Muslim, Christian, whatever, you could still be a Freemason. It doesn't matter what religion you are. So I was quite surprised by that because I have heard. Prior to that, I'd heard about Freemasons being evil and satanic. But then I'm thinking, but one of the main things that they say you've got to believe is you've got to believe in God or in a God, like God, like the Christian God or Allah, or you've got to believe in God. But like you're saying, I think with the lower orders, probably, up to your stage three, that's maybe the front that they put on to say, this is the idea.
Yes, because I've also heard that it goes up to 5 stages, but then some other people, when I read other things, it says it goes up to 12 stages. So
there's actually apparently 33 levels.
I left 33. Wow. See, so that's the thing. As he says, there's a front. There's just this normal, because look, I've also wanted to join one, and I look at it and I know this one guy that does some of the mystery school, the modern mystery school classes. He's a Mason, and he was showing me pictures of him and his Mason things and everything. And it just seems like a boys' club. And I've also heard that it's a boys' club, but I think that's where, because there's that front, and then you got to get to where the core of it is, or get initiated into the real secret part of it, where they teach you the ancient traditions and the real.
Yeah, but I think that only comes in many, many years later.
Yeah,
because as a Master Mason, I think Master Mason is third level. And I think then it's still at the front. It's still in the normal thing. So I think it's only when you get to 33 do they give you.
But also, it's also funny, because it's being called satanic and there's all these documentaries on it saying satanic. That's why I was just saying, so documentaries are such propaganda machines. You can just push any agenda you want. I mean, you can make people believe the earth's flat. Yeah. But the thing is that, even the modern mystery school, which I love doing the classes and I love the group and the organization and all the people in it, is just so wonderful, and there's so much support, and it's just so full of love and light, and It's amazing. Like, but then there's this one article online that says that it's a cult and they're satanic and they, and it's, and it's like that we eat each other's semen and we drink each other's like menstrual fluid and like, and you
is
can't
this supposed to be the mystery schools?
And I'm just thinking, no, this is the one that I'm like, do the classes at the modern mystery school.
So, so you drinking, like, drinking Oaks pee?
Oh, geez. I mean, I'm telling you, like, it would be like, it, if that was going on, it would make it very interesting. But like, there's like nothing of that at all. I mean, I didn't even know where. And it's also funny, like, it's on the internet, like, people, like, somebody, which is quite sad because people read that and then they believe it. They believe, oh, that's what it is.
No, maybe, but you know why? It. Because you've had some guy that joined, apparently, he joined. And this is what he found. In the meantime, the Oaks luck being nowhere near. he's never joined any freaking school. He just talks a lot of cuck.
Yeah, he's just making some clickbait. He's just making some sensationalized things so people can just like click on his thing and get some. But the thing is that it's just so sad because there's like, you know, there's like 100 or 200 articles of how wonderful the thing is and everything. And there's just this one stupid article and people will just click on that and just believe everything they said. Mm. But they won't believe on the 20, the 100 articles that are like, great articles about it and on us and so we were all a bit fucked.
I suppose it's in these type of things you've actually got to test it yourself, see what it's all about.
Yeah, well that's exactly it. That's, you got to just go and see it yourself and then you can make a decision. You can't just, but I say that with everything in life. I mean you can't correct. there's no discernment anymore because people just only believe what other people tell them. No one actually just goes and just, so this way, when I hear someone says, no, that's bad, or that's, you know, especially from the pandemic, I'm like, okay, well, I want to check what this is, because if everyone's saying like, this is like crazy or bad or whatever, I want to just see for myself because I don't believe anything anybody tells me anymore.
Mm. Yeah. It puts you in a place to make an informed decision.
Yeah. And it's also discernment. That's like, discernment is like one of the main things they actually teach in the mystery school because it's from hermetics and like from, you know, all the hermetic principles. And one of the main keys, the first key is discernment. And that's what you taught at the mystery school, the modern mystery school is discernment. That's the first thing they tell you. They say like, these is what we teach. You can try it for yourself. If it works, that's great. But if it doesn't work, then that's cool. Then you can leave, whatever. Just try it yourself and see what, if, you know, we're not here to say that it's right or wrong. And don't actually believe anything we say. Just try it and see if it works.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool. Well, thanks, man. Yeah. Nice chats. We'll check you next week. And we'll see all you guys next week. Thank you for listening again. And yeah, cheers, guys. Have a good evening.
Bye, guys.